Hey guys, remember, there's going to be a little schedule change in Pop Rocket moving forward. Pop Rocket is going to be recording on Wednesdays and coming out on Fridays. So when you get to Wednesday and there is not a Pop Rocket, do not be alarmed. We have simply changed our schedule. Oh, hey there. I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are journalist and novelist Margaret Wappler.
Hello there, Guy.
Hello, Margaret. This is a very cute dress you have going on.
Thank you. I think it might be my most subversive dress.
In what way?
I don't know, an animal print.
Oh, yes.
Tying into the movie, the theme tonight.
Oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have one of my old friends here. He was my boss at Totally Biased. He was... a comic from the Bay Area I always enjoyed and looked up to, Mr. Kevin Avery.
Hey, sir.
Oh, also Emmy Award winner. Kevin Avery.
Hey. Well, that always sounds weird.
What else should people know about you?
I don't know. I think you said it, comic from, you know, the SF days, and did some writing on some TV shows.
An esteemed and talented television writer.
Well, thank you.
Also, I should make you say hello, hello. You're sitting in the winner's seat. You have to greet me by saying hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
He did it with spark. I like that.
Kevin Avery does everything with spark.
I try.
Coming up on this week's show, we're going to be talking about the new film Sorry to Bother You. Plus, we'll each be sharing our latest gems. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Margaret Wappler.
I read this crazy article in the New York Times Magazine on Bad Baby. I don't know if you guys know about Bad Baby.
No.
But she is a troubled Florida teen turned rapper based off of it. Performance, I guess you could call it, on Dr. Phil, where she came on there with her mom. And, you know, she was like one of these teens that the mom can't get control of.
Yeah.
And she backtalked a ton to Dr. Phil. And then the audience was like yelling at her. And at some point she was like, "Catch me outside."
It's the Catch Me Outside girl.
Yes,
okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's, I was wondering.
It's like as soon as you say the Catch Me Outside part, yeah, people are like, oh. So the article is written by Jamie Lauren Keels. She's a young journalist in her 20s. She did such a good job. She was so smart about her analysis of Bad Baby and what she means for the entertainment industry, particularly the nexus between music, branding, and YouTube. Like, the way she starts the story is way more valuable and keen than starting it with Bad Baby herself. She starts it with Adam Kluger, who is this branding innovator, who basically is the guy responsible for brand dropping. Like, all the celebs that you see on Instagram who are pushing like fit tea and all that garbage, that's basically that guy's like brainchild.
Yeah.
So he got like Lady Gaga to do things like that, and Christina Aguilera, Jason Derulo, so on and so forth. And he got into this kind of legal spat with Britney Spears, quit the business, and said, okay, I'm going to find somebody from the bottom and bring them up to the top. Like, I don't want to work with these famous people anymore. I want to find somebody at the bottom. So he sees the Catch Me Outside girl, Danielle Bregoli, and he decides to like make her into the next thing. And it's all about just her rise to... It's definitely not the top. It's, you know, probably about 17 tiers below the top.
Mm-hmm.
But she's touring around, like, you know, she has these hits that are charting on like the Billboard 100. Like, one is called High Bish. Bish.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. It's just a fascinating look at how somebody like that becomes famous and basically with no real skill. I mean, she's got some degree of charisma and some nice hair and nails. She has really long, crazy acrylic nails, but there's not a whole lot else there. But the whole thing also sent me down this scary but very fascinating rabbit hole all about the Instagram teens that are like role-playing rappers.
Uh-huh.
Including this like 9-year-old little girl named Lil Tay, who is this like tiny slip of a Canadian girl who just goes on with her swagger, like kicking cars and being like, "What's up, bitches?" Like, it's a bizarre. She's like 9 years old.
Yeah.
It's a very bizarre. And has like millions of followers. And actually, you know, as these things go, Danielle got into a fight already with Lil Tay. As well as, yeah. Of course.
That's how you build your brand.
Yeah.
Yeah. As well as I'm Whoa Vicky, who is like another little girl who's in Georgia, whose dad is a real estate developer. There's a really bad trend going on with like children of real estate developers becoming famous. You know what I mean?
Well, there's the whole Rebecca Black, Daddy, Can You Buy Me, like, sad internet fame. Mm-hmm. Do you think that this whole situation will be the premise of the next A Star Is Born? Instead of a musical artist, it will be finding like a person who is on Dr. Phil and turning them into a YouTube rapper.
I think so. Like, yeah. It's just like what's the next issue of fame that we can explore and investigate? And it does seem like the YouTube version of fame, the branding juggernaut version of fame, is way more mysterious and interesting to me at this point because I don't get it.
Also, Margaret, I would like to say the bad 1970s A Star Is Born was written by Joan Didion and her husband. So if you and David wanted to take a stab at that, I mean...
We need to rent a house in Malibu first.
Absolutely.
Like Joan Didion style.
Yes.
But have you seen the Star Is Born trailer?
Oh, it looks good.
It looks so weird to me, though. When did Bradley Cooper become Kris Kristofferson?
I know.
I'm confused.
I'm a little bit curious. I have to admit, I want to see it. I don't know why, but I don't know.
I think you guys are more optimistic about it than me. The Lady Gaga part is like pulling me into a certain degree, but I can't get over what Bradley Cooper's doing. It just doesn't feel authentic.
Well, I've never seen any of the three previous.
Me neither.
Don't start with the Streisand. Would you let Silas be an Instagram rapper?
Oh my God, that's a really good question. I think it would depend on like what his message is and his styling is and all of that. And he's like, got to be good.
And have a passion.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. He can't just be a thought. You know what I'm saying?
Speaking of thoughts, Kevin Avery, what are you all about this week?
Here's the thing. This is it's really what I'm not all about for me because
That's crazy, Kevin. You're a creature of nerd passions. You love the world around you.
Sure.
It's striking that on your Pop Rocket debut, you're being negative. But I'm at the edge of my seat.
I don't want to be negative, but I do want this in my feelings challenge. I am seeing this everywhere.
What is? Oh wait, I think I have seen that on Twitter, like the hashtag.
It's the Drake song. Kiki is the song. This is sweeping the nation. I saw some girl dancing outside of her, essentially ghost riding the whip, something that I didn't know people were doing anymore, not since the 90s, or aughts. And then Will Smith did one on the, but I don't really know what this is.
All right, explain it to me.
There's a Drake song. I think it's called Kiki. Is it? Am I right?
I think you're right.
And that has spawned
this. No, wait,
this.
Sorry. I think he does have a song called In My Feelings. Maybe
is
we
it
should,
In My Feelings? Oh, but Kiki is the... Here's the problem. This is the person I've become. This thing has taken over.
We're all grandpas?
I guess. Yeah. I don't want... I have...
So it's,
no.
It's people dancing just sort of like in the middle of things because Drake told them to?
I guess so. Will Smith is on top of a bridge just dancing.
Oh, I got excited because I thought it was some sort of like radical honesty thing.
No, it's the. I mean,
Margaret sees writing exercises everywhere.
Yeah, if I were to take the In My Feelings challenge, I'd just be confessing to a lot of things.
Right, that's what I was.
That not
wanting.
Dancing on a bridge or alongside my car. I don't know who Kiki is. I don't know.
She's inspired something.
I guess Drake is in his feelings about her, but I'm simultaneously obsessed and completely disconnected from this.
Do you think it will have more or less shelf life than Flaky?
Ooh, I think more. I'm going to say more.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I'd like to piggyback on what you said about this guy taking people from the ground up. And
yeah.
I've seen this before in music history. New Edition, their manager... They fired him, and they, New Edition, the popular R&B singing group from the 80s.
Legendary.
They fired their manager. He sued them for the name. He lost in court. New Edition's from Boston. Shout out Orchard Park Projects. And he went back to Boston, found five white guys no one had heard of before, put them together, called them New Kids on the Block, and it changed the landscape of music.
Why have you not written that movie?
I wanted to do the New Edition story, and then somebody else beat me to it.
That's such beautiful vengeance. That was a TV movie, right?
Yeah, or it was like a miniseries.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty good.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Amazing that he kept new. He was like, I got to keep that part of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything else, race included, can change.
Yeah, I forget his name. I want to say it's Maury Starr, but I don't think it is. I don't think it's Maury Starr.
Just a good sentiment of, I made you, I can make you again.
Yeah.
Like, I can make you better.
Yeah. It changed music.
Yes.
Forever.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah, well.
Okay.
Can change the business.
Yes, that's very true. Like, look, if anyone came and criticized the Spice Girls to me, I would feel exactly the same way you do, Mr. Avery.
Can I tell you guys one more thing that she said to Dr. Phil? Bad baby. She said, I made you like Oprah made you. Like,
ooh.
That is a burn. I mean, that is some primo shade.
I mean, that's having enough information to be able to like truly go after someone. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
But Dr. Phil should have said that. It should have been Dr. Phil saying, I made you like Oprah made me.
Yeah.
That's really how
it went.
You know
what? You're totally right. I mean, he didn't even blink.
Because
he's so spray tanned that he can, I don't think.
He needs better roast writers.
Yeah.
Okay. So this week, I am about Sandra Oh. And I know you're probably like, well, everyone's about Sandra Oh this week, guy. And that's completely valid. That's completely true. But I would like to turn my eye to another Sandra Oh, a different Sandra Oh. And that is just the fact that this woman, before getting to this place, essentially had to have two careers. Starting out as a Korean-Canadian in Ottawa, like, she's not somebody who showed up to Hollywood and they were like, you're so talented. So last week, I learned about Sandra Oh from a movie called Double Happiness that I saw on the Encore Network in like 1995 or something like this. It was a Canadian film about a Chinese-Canadian girl who wants to be an actress. It was directed by Mina Shum, a Chinese-Canadian actress. And it was just this wonderful situation where, like, the right filmmaker and the right actress came together. And it's here. I was only able to watch half of it because it is only available streaming the first half of it on YouTube. And I assumed the second half would be somewhere, and it was not. And then I went on Amazon. And
that hurts.
You had to buy old DVDs. I paid $45 for a goddamn DVD. But I needed to have
Honey, you should have checked eBay or something. I feel like it would have been cheaper.
So good. It's basically like, I would either describe it as Party Girl with the white privilege scraped off, or Party Girl meets Joy Luck Club. It's like 22-year-old girl in 1994 with Chinese parents. And just the thing of like, not just, oh, I have immigrant parents, but like, I have immigrant parents and I want to have a dream. And I've also never watched anything that had somebody aspiring to be an actor that really sold acting as a profession that was something other than just, I want people to pay attention to me.
Mm.
Like, you see this character doing Southern accents, doing all of these accents, wanting to be somebody who can just merge into roles and be all of the people. And she's reading for roles as waitresses, you know, and being told to use accents. Also, the first time I saw it, I didn't realize it was Chinese Canadian. And there is a wonderful scene where her only line as a waitress that she's reading for is, do you want gravy with your fries? And I, as like a 19-year-old, was like, what does that mean? And then it was like, oh, that's what that means. But like, let us not forget all like the 20 goddamn years she spent, 25 years between then and now. This is a woman with two Genie, you know, she had to rack up two Genie Awards in Canada, a Cable Ace Award. She's got a goddamn NAACP Image Award. Like, her having to be twice as hard to get half as far, but she's been doing exemplary work at every step along the way. Kevin has a very curious look on his face, and the answer is when they don't have enough nominees in a category, they will nominate other people who have other skin colors.
Sure.
The Mindy Project would occasionally get NAACP Image Award nominations. But like, she's just been so excellent at every step along the way, and nobody was ever able to look at Sideways and say, let's give a movie all to you. No one was able to look at Grey's Anatomy and say, let's give a movie all to you.
I think her performance alone for Grey's Anatomy extended my viewing by like two or three seasons. I mean, I bowed out a long ass time ago, but I hung in there a long time because her character character was great. She filled that character, which is so much like fierce power and some disturbing ambition.
She's always rooted. She's always chaotic. That is the thing, is that she is always putting you in a place where you know that there's like reality here, but there's always just something a little bit screwy about it. And that is best exemplified as a contemplation of Christina Yang done by Bowen Yang, who in tribute to her nomination, Bowen Yang of Las Culturistas, did a video where he lip-synced to the climactic scene of Christina Yang as a character, and everybody was gagged for it, and it's wonderful. But she made two movies with Mina Shum. The other one is called Long Life, Happiness, and Prosperity. That is available for streaming. Like, that is something you can see. Please watch it. If you get a chance to watch Double Happiness, fucking dig in. If you are in Los Angeles after Amazon delivers that DVD, come over to my house. We can watch it. If you bring along a receipt for my book, My Life as a Goddess, now available on Amazon. That's a requirement.
Yes.
But like, there is a hook.
Wait, so let me get the chronology. Sideways, fair to say her breakout?
Like, but she had so many breakouts. She had, like... So, like, Double Happiness was a breakout in Canada.
Sure.
Then she, you know, when Canadians succeed, they come to America. She was on our list. She was successful on our list. And, like, that broke her. And then there were sort of, like, 6 years or something like that where she was just working actor in Los Angeles in everything. She's in the goddamn Princess Diaries. And, yeah, like, Jesus. But it's just that thing of all of these things that would have lofted a white actor or actress into another echelon.
Totally.
She just got to go up one step every time. And she's just fucking done it like with such completeness. There was, I went into a little Sandra Oh hole on YouTube today. There was a video done with like different Asian American actors called like The Pace Project. And hers is like 8 minutes of her just sort of like talking about things. And it really is a wonderful like, Hollywood's an abusive boyfriend. When it's not there for you, get your girlfriends and go to a movie. Drink a glass of wine. Do your own thing.
Her career reminds me in some ways of Regina King's. You know, like
God,
somebody else that you can go back and look at the last like 20 years of movies at this point and just see her in great role after great role.
Fucking 227.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yet at the same time, she's never been given just like the lead starring role in a movie.
Yeah.
But
and she's way overdue at this point.
This is why both of these women excite me. They never go away.
Right.
They never go away. Still here. I don't know that much about Sandra Oh's work. I know Sideways and I know Grey's Anatomy. I don't even watch Grey's. But she was just somebody I was accustomed to always being around. So like now when Killing Eve is out.
Have you watched it?
Killing Eve?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I mean, yes. It's the kind of thing you like.
Yeah. Yes. I love it. And I'm like, oh, of course. Yeah. Here she is.
Yeah.
And it makes total sense. And you're right. That's one of my favorite parts of that show is that she's almost just as unhinged as her nemesis in this.
The way she's constantly in the state of like, this is happening?
Yes.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Thrilling.
Yeah.
All right. Sandra Oh, we salute you. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We're going to be right back to talk about Sorry to Bother You after this.
Hi, I'm Paula Poundstone.
And I'm Adam Felber.
Adam, I haven't gotten one thing done today.
Well, let me see your to-do list. Ah, yeah, well, here. Make 30-second promo for Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, so at least you're getting that done.
Score!
Except you haven't said what the show's about.
We're like a comedy field guide to life, starring me and you. I give useful advice, and we have real experts to talk about things like how to keep a friend or what to do when you encounter a bear.
Bully for you, but you haven't said where people can find the show.
Oh, MaximumFun.org or wherever you find your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. Just so you know, we are going to be majorly spoiling Sorry to Bother You. So if you haven't seen it yet and you don't want anything revealed, stop listening now. You've been warned.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Margaret Wappler.
Kevin Avery.
Two matters of old business. The first one is we lack a... quorum of permanent Pop Rocket hosts here to be able to consider the question of The Rock's inclusion the receipt of the Rock of the Pop Rocket seal of approval. That will come at the next meeting where we have a quorum. And Margaret, give us an update on the Wobbler test.
We're hard at work on it in the labs.
Yeah.
Basically, it's a test to determine how you can get a straight man to watch a female-centric movie.
Yeah.
It has to have a few different things. We are calculating those few different things right now. I don't know if you want to weigh in, Kevin, on things that you find necessary to watch in a movie that's actually a female-centric movie.
Give me an example of a female-centric movie.
Well, we were talking about Sharp Objects last week, mm-hmm. and the cast is like almost all female wall-to-wall, except there is Chris Messina. It's Amy Adams' new HBO show. Except Chris Messina is there to be the dude who is a detective and who likes to drink whiskey to bring the dudes in.
Okay.
I mean, so I would imagine you probably did not like Under the Tuscan Sun or never saw it, but did like Wonder Woman.
No, I did not see Under the Tuscan Sun, but I loved Wonder Woman, but I love superhero movies. But now when I think of a female-centric film, I think of Bread and Tulips.
Oh.
I'm going to say 2004 or
2005.
But
Adam, what's his name is the star of that, isn't he?
I don't know who the woman, it's a foreign film.
Oh.
It's about this woman who goes on vacation with her family, a bus trip with her husband and two sons. They stop in this small town on the bus to take a bit of a break. They're headed I don't know where. They all load back on the bus, and they accidentally leave her in the town. And inexplicably, she just stays in this town and does not return to her family. And she lives
this
whole life.
One of those female-centric films.
And kind of has I don't even think it's sexual, but this sort of relationship with some man that she meets. Mm. I can't remember.
So it's sort of like Stella Got Her Groove Back, Stella Got Her Groove Back.
Maybe, but
bit.
It's less. It's hard to describe, and I haven't seen it in such a long time. But yeah.
Did you find it compelling?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Did the dude touch a gun at any point in time?
No.
Margaret, make a note of that.
Okay.
No gun.
Okay.
No
noted.
Gun. Family stayed at home, kind of like, when are you coming back? And I think they were like this Italian. It was the weirdest movie, but it was great. I highly recommend it.
So we're going to talk about the Wobbler test and whether The Rock truly deserves our first seal of approval. And if you guys want to weigh in about any of this, go to the show thread from last week and tell us if you think The Rock deserves this. And tell us, too, if you think the Wobbler test needs certain criteria. What criteria would you suggest?
Give us factors that we can test on the lab animals. We have them watching rom-coms as we speak. But speaking
in tiny pens where they can't move.
Speaking
Hope Floats, by the way, one of my favorite movies.
Okay, just I'm writing that one down.
I got fired from a job and went and watched that and thoroughly enjoyed it.
That's a great movie.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Sorry to Bother You,
sure.
The new film from Boots Riley, which is about life in the Bay Area, where mm-hmm. Kevin and I both lived. It's about working in a call center in Oakland, which I did.
I did.
Oh, you did as well?
Not in Oakland, in Alabama.
Oh.
Wait, guys, I telemarketed, too, in Chicago.
Really?
What?
So we are all former telemarketers.
Okay, wait, I may be different. I was in a call. We were at, like, a helpline.
Oh, you were, like, inbound?
Yeah.
For what?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for exercise equipment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And the premise of the film is basically a dude who's, like, having a hard time finding a job, gets a really shitty job at a call center. But there is always the promise of moving up to this other better call center where life is happy. And the film really is taking a big goofy stab at capitalism, mm-hmm. like is an attempt to criticize the way that we all buy into the fiction of capitalism and don't recognize the ways that it's holding us down. We are talking about this film, so there are going to be spoilers. Calm the fuck down.
relax.
You're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah.
Margaret and Kevin, what did you think of this film?
I loved it. I was in a weird mood when I went to go see it, too. I was not in a good place, but I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it was fun to see the Bay Area again. It was, you know, I went in, you know, knowing Boots and rooting for him, and then there were some familiar faces in it.
Oh,
as
yeah. Games, our friends Kamau Bell and Nato Green were in that.
Yeah.
Kate Berlant.
Yeah. So it was fun to watch those guys do their thing. But yeah, the movie was, the attention to detail really struck me.
Like what?
Like little things like his rag getting bloodier and bloodier the further down the sort of shithole he went in his life and this job and his circumstances. I was just like, is it gonna clean up that rag? Oh nope, it's just gonna get worse and worse. And then it was gone.
Like, and he had no scar.
Yeah.
So the main character Cassius becomes a scab working during a strike. Somebody throws a Coke can at him, and his forehead bleeds for about half of the movie.
Yeah, and that's sort of on all the posters you see him with that thing, and I love stuff like that where I'm looking at a poster and I'm like, what is happening? And then you see it's all, you know.
Well, an interesting question, like, for a comedian is, mm-hmm. you have, like, an epic bit about being a black guy with a very white voice.
Yeah.
Is it weird watching something that is sort of like a film articulation of this piece of material that you wrote that's really funny and really evergreen, and now people will be like...
Well, we should explain, though, that Lakeith Stanfield
is
told that if he really wants to make successful calls, Danny Glover, who's sitting right next to him, is like, you got to use your white voice. And he explains what that means.
Yeah, and I mean, it's weird for me. What resonated with me is there's a moment in the movie where I think he said, hey, people already say I have a white voice. And they're like, no, you don't. And I've had that conversation with people, whether they're comedians, in fact, in San Francisco, who are like, yeah, I know what you mean, totally. And I'm like, no, you don't know what I've gone through as a, you know, what I've had to listen to or, you know. But it's, I understood the disarming of it and what it means to have that quote unquote white voice. I remember riding around with a friend of mine who told a black joke in a car with me. And I think forgot that I would riffed the thing. It wasn't like two black guys walking, but like riffed this thing. And then I think he caught himself and he forgot, oh God, I'm sitting in the car with this black guy.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
So I've been a part of that, and I've seen what this voice can sort of, what it can do.
Margot, what were your thoughts on the film?
I loved it. I actually saw it today, so it's fresh in my mind. And I loved how antic it was. I loved how stuffed with ideas it was, that there were constant Easter eggs to find all throughout the script and things that are just happening in the back of the shot. Even when Lakeith Stanfield, you know, Cassius is like in the office and getting talked to by the manager, in the background are just these two guys like throwing papers off the copiers. Like, it's just one of those movies that feels like an instant cult classic. Like, when I saw it, I was like, this will keep going around. Like, people are going to watch this for a long time. And I don't think everything about it got sewed up in quite the right way. Like, there were some loose strings at the end, but I really don't even care because the energy of it was just so positive and fun. And I'm here for his critique. I mean, this is probably the most radical movie I can think of in a long time in terms of what kind of critique it gives about capitalism, about racism, about corporate labor, and, you know, all of those things being embraced by all sorts of people that claim to be, you know, concerned about the little people, etc. And I just thought it was just electric. And I've loved Boots Riley for a long time. If somebody had told me he'd be directing this movie in like 15 years, like when I first learned about him in maybe like 2000 or something like that, my jaw would have dropped. Always seemed way too left of center to kind of be embraced by Hollywood.
One of the things I liked most about the movie was having a movie about capitalism made by somebody from the perspective of someone whose ancestors were capital, you know, sort of saying wage labor is not so divorced from this process.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, I loved the first half of the movie. I liked the second half of the movie. The first half of the movie was really sort of like an updated Office Space for our time with a clearer political perspective. And it didn't have that element of just sort of like there's chaos going on behind them in every scene, which felt like just alive and electric and really exciting. And also like Steve Yeun as sort of like the like labor organizer, like our friend Nato.
Yes.
Like was this really interesting character you hadn't really seen before, sort of like showing up to politicize and radicalize this group of people. And then in the second half of the movie, so many more ideas arrive.
Yeah.
And this is where the spoilers are really going to start, guys. That I was a little bit like, what is he saying? And then when we got to, I liked the movie so much. And then we got to the final moment where I realized, so one of the things that happens is that this movie was very Margaret Atwood-y in the whole sort of like, you essentially put yourself in prison for the certainty of work. There's a thing called like, it's not WeWork, that's an actual thing.
Yeah.
But it's just sort of like a thing.
Oh, yeah. What the hell was that called?
It was a thing you join where you have certainty of employment and housing, but you essentially have no control over your life. And then the guy who was CEO of that was turning the people into half horse, half human so that they would be more effective laborers for him. Mm-hmm. At the end of the film, when you have our heroes triumphant, it's a bunch of dudes standing around with these dude horse people.
Mm.
And then Tessa Thompson shows up as essentially a prize that it was won by Cassius. And I was like, that's not good. Because the other thing was, in the movie, there are some issues of sort of like monogamy and sexual ownership that when they showed up about halfway through the film, I was like, well, this is not the most communist of perspectives. Like,
yeah, no, her character for me was bothersome. Okay. I think she, as the actress, Tessa Thompson, is really charming and beautiful.
We're all on board for Tessa Thompson.
Absolutely.
She's the Sandra Oh who's getting those chances.
Yeah, and so there was, for a while, I really wanted to just ride for her, but I feel like they didn't do a lot with her character, and that she, like, her main characteristics, like, after her earrings, which were amazing,
yes.
But that was like her name, her main characteristic as a as a person. After that, it was just like how cool she was. You know what I mean? Like how down and what a good girlfriend. She was sort of like the good girlfriend all the time. Like staying loyal, not cheating on him. You know, when the guy, the union organizer, like hits on her.
Well, that was what was so interesting. It's not that she, it's not that it was a question of her either going for like Cassius or some dude who's more invested in capitalism, or it ended up being somebody who was less invested in capitalism. So at the end, I didn't really understand what Steve Yeun had done wrong to, like, you know, like make him not a viable, like, romantic partner.
Well, he,
other than the way that we treat Asian men in film.
Well, that is one thing I liked about his character a lot, was that it was this Asian dude who came off suddenly. First of all, he's this union organizer, and he feels like one thing, and then suddenly he's kind of this smooth.
He was suave as fuck, yeah.
Yeah, and I kind of like that because you don't get to see that a lot.
Yeah, when he
from
does
Asian men, and you know, it was just interesting. It was a little bit out of nowhere, but I was like, okay, I'm here for this.
Yeah,
you know, let's see what happens.
But I felt like in that moment where she says that, you know, she tells him that she fooled around with another guy and she said, we did everything but.
Yeah.
I felt like even that was kind of a moment of like ownership. You know, if she had said, yeah, I had sex with this other guy, like Lakeith would have been really angry, it felt like, or something. Like there was just some kind of some ironing out that I felt like needed to be done. Like I wish he had showed this to like more of his feminist friends or something.
Yeah, I mean, there were a ton of great performances. Steve Yeun was great. Lakeith Stanfield was really good. Tessa Thompson is great. Armie Hammer shows up as the guy who owns the sort of like business that is essentially a slave plantation.
Yeah.
And also I want to say that there is an Oakland downtown apartment that I thought did some of the finest acting I have ever seen. Kevin, as someone from the Bay Area, you did look at that apartment with like lust and envy, didn't you?
Now I'm trying to remember what apartment you...
Oh, fuck you. It's like...
An Oakland downtown...
No, it's like...
Oh, God, yes!
Yeah, the one where he's like moving on up
believe,
and he has that beautiful...
No, because also like you assume that like everyone's beautiful apartment in a film is on a set, except that they clearly had real Oakland life like going on in the background, and it was just like... Lush.
I was like, what is that? They need to make a sequel about just how to get that apartment.
Well, I feel like the things that were most affecting to me were sort of like this idea of the promise of capitalism. And is it this like, as people who all of us like, I think, have issues and have been shit on by capitalism, but have also had nice things done here during sort of like the height of our earning capability, this like am I buying into the idea that I'll get to be one of the chosen ones and in the process fucking over my everyone around me and myself?
Yourself.
You know?
What do you lose? And I loved the character of the guy. I can't remember his name now, but basically the guy who had the other black, who had Patton Oswalt's voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He sort of brings Lakeith into
Omari
the fold.
Omari Hardwick.
Yes. Yeah.
And they never say his name, the character's
yes.
name.
Yes. I loved that. He had everything stripped from him.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy was basically a slave to this. He was this, and it was very interesting too because, like, you know, Lakeith is kind of this skinny, wiry dude, and then he puts on this white voice, and it's not, you can see it coming out of that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But this was this sort of, this buff kind of really masculine sort of, well, you know, bowler hat kind of dude. And he's got this voice and he can't say his own name. And it just, and he was, it's like, and he looked smooth as hell. You know, he's rich. He, you know, he's got all this shit, but what did that guy have to give up?
Okay. I wish that those bluest eye elements, the idea of, putting yourself into this white voice, what do you lose? What are you alienating yourself from? I wish that had been more of the story that was brought to completion.
Mm.
The place that it really does show up in the second half is there is a moment when Armie Hammer, playing the head of the like proto-slave corporation,
Steve Lift,
he insists that Cassius can rap.
Yes.
Cassius cannot rap. And then why don't I hand this story over to somebody who is more capable of telling it?
Margaret? yes. Yeah, so I'm trying to remember a moment where I had where this has sort of been. I've had that happen to me, or something like that. And I mean,
this situation is essentially that. I have just demanded that you perform your yes. race for us, which is not great.
Here we go. No, but I appreciate you handing it off to me, not going, I'll just take this one.
Yes.
But so he. That was, I think that might have been my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah.
So he's sitting there at this party. It's Armie Hammer. It's all these white people. And yeah, but you, I bet you can rap. I bet you can, and I can't. And he insists upon, I love that he never, I thought, okay, at some point they're going to let this go. And the next thing you know, Lakeith is standing on a stairway in front of an audience of people. And he can't, and he's trying, you know, he's, my name is Cassius. I'm here to say that kind of bullshit. And then it's just, nigga shit, nigga shit, nigga, and the crowd goes wild, and it's amazing.
It's like, so
it's
good.
It's my favorite moment of the film.
It was so interesting to watch in the wake of Nanette, and just sort of thinking about that way that society expects you when you are a member of a marginalized group to sort of like use your inside powers to do the commentary that they are no longer allowed to do.
Yeah,
that like they just wanted to see blackness in its rawest form.
Yeah.
And so they can't do it, so it's his responsibility for them.
Yeah. And in a safe space.
Yeah.
Yeah. They wouldn't want the real thing.
I mean, it was exciting that the movie kept contorting. And I have to say that, like, the biological experiments, the commentary, like, it was so Margaret Atwood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, except that there were no women who mattered.
Yeah, yeah, Tessa Thompson needed like a fierce friend or two. But you know, I do think that the movie, when it makes this leap to showing that like it's not just, you know, regular people getting exploited, it's now this sort of new, in a way it's kind of like a classic alien story, you know, like do we care about the aliens if they don't look like this, us, if we can't relate to them, etc. Like, do we care for all life forms or not? And he decides to care for these guys, and it is this kind of opening of the movie beyond just like yourself, right? Like, I think a lot of a lot of critiques about capitalism go just for the sort of like, what happens when you sell out? Like, how does that make you feel? How does it make your friends feel? How does it make your girlfriend who no longer wants to hang out with you feel? But then, like, there's all these like bigger ramifications.
Well, it's so cool that the big sellout job that they offer him, and this is definitely a spoiler alert, you guys, is to go undercover amongst the horse people to eventually be the Martin Luther King of the horse people. So that their liberator would be someone that they controlled. And as he became like a part of the liberation movement, I was like, is this still what's happening? And that was such an interesting commentary on capitalism, but also with a nod to like the rich tradition of black conspiracy theories of people who have had lots of horrible shit happen to them that were kept secret, and a rich tradition of saying, like, you know, the Rothschilds control the weather, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It was very Tuskegee experiment.
Yes, yes. It was
as
very
someone who went to Tuskegee.
Yes.
And I remember actually while I was at Tuskegee, they told us we would all have to get mandatory flu shots.
Oh, wow.
And that did not fly. that did not fly. I'm here to tell you. Nobody got that flu shot.
All right. Final question. We have to cut this a little short. I'm sorry. It's my fault.
It's my fault, guys. But, let's be honest.
Do you think Oakland is having a moment in film, or has just the white press not paid attention to Oakland being present in film?
I think Oakland... Sorry to jump in.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I do think Oakland's having a certain kind of moment because of Black Lives Matter and Occupy. I think in terms of just where we think our sort of political consciousness is located right now, Oakland is pretty up there.
I do love that the spirit of this movie is rooted in the shit show of Oakland Occupy.
Yeah.
Like there was, Occupy was poorly handled in a lot of places, rarely as poorly as Oakland.
Well, you know...
Thanks, Gene Kwan.
I think a moment is a lot longer than we all would.
That's
think.
True. I mean, yeah. It goes back to the Black Panthers.
Yeah, but when you made me think of Fruitvale Station.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I was like, oh wait, no, we were talking about Oakland, you know, several years ago, and so I think these moments take their time, and now we're seeing it slowly. It's building and building a bit because I'm forgetting already the name of the other movie with David Diggs that's about to come out in a few weeks. Uh-huh. That's
oh, right.
About Oakland.
Well, and of course we had
Blind Spotting.
Yes,
we had Atlanta for Oakland in Black Panther.
What?
There were scenes that were supposed to be Oakland but shot in Atlanta in Black Panther.
Wow. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Well, and then the larger ideas about San Francisco being taken over by Silicon Valley and completely mm-hmm. transformed as a place where, like, nobody making less than 200,000 can live anymore.
Yeah.
Which was very true of those apartments. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We're going to be right back after this.
Beginning this summer, you can listen to new episodes of Inside Pop every other week for an even deeper dive inside the world of pop culture.
Now, we're still bringing you our brilliant insight, always on the nose opinions, and insidery inside information on the most interesting pop culture stories of the week.
And we'll also have interviews with the pop culture professionals who create the culture you crave.
For example, we'll speak to casting directors about how they find the right talent for the right role.
We'll talk to music supervisors about how they choose the music to create the right mood.
And we'll grill producers who'll discuss what exactly a producer does.
Oh man, Sean, how many times has someone said to you, oh, you're a producer, so what do you actually do?
So many times.
Same here. So make sure to catch Inside Pop every other Wednesday on Maximum Fun to indulge your pop culture obsessions.
And to hear in-depth interviews from the movers and the shakers in TV, music, film, and more.
And I'm sorry to do this. No one wants me to be doing this constantly, but also Rocketeers, you guys gotta buy my goddamn book, okay? It's sitting right there waiting for you on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, anywhere. Margaret's got this lovely independent bookstore thing that you can order things from.
Skylight, Powell's, The Strand, whatever your particular jam is in your city.
But please, pre-order my book, My Life as a Goddess, today. Because it will make me happy, and we all have to be successful published authors on this podcast.
It's a requirement now.
It is. Winter's next. Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Margaret Wappler.
Kevin Avery.
And every week on Pop Rocket, we ask our panel, what's your jam? I have to leave, so I'm going to go first. I'm sorry. Guy Branum, what is your jam? This jam was officially submitted to us by Kat Hughes. It is All For You by Years and Years, and it is just a little band of twinks who are essentially like a bunch of different Troy Sivans having their own little stab at pop music, and it is really way more of what I have been looking for in a jam. Yeah, you've got a mission. I thought Margaret, you could have a time at the beach to that, couldn't you?
I could deal, guy, and I don't know if I would dial that one up. I'm
fuck
sorry.
You, Margaret.
I'm sorry, baby.
All right, I have to leave. Margaret, you have the helm.
I
bye,
take
guy.
It.
Bye.
Bye-bye, darling. Have fun at that other podcast. Okay, Kevin, what's your jam?
My jam is a little tune by Justin Timberlake called Higher, Higher. Mm. And this is from the new Man of the Woods album that I did not know. First of all, I thought Man of the Woods was like a movie.
No, it's the meaning of the name Silas.
You learn something new every day.
Yeah, now you know.
I heard about this, and I thought it was some weird movie. And then I said, no, it's a new album. And then I thought it was going to be some country thing. And it's a little bit more of the same Justin Timberlake, but with a bit of a twang. Anyway, this is one of these songs that I listened to, and I wasn't paying attention to. And then once I started listening, I realized, holy shit, I love this song. And now I can't. Now it's required listening to every day. Yeah. You're special on every level. Success is cool.
Money is fine. But you're special. Another level. There's like just a touch of some 70s yacht rock in there too.
Yeah.
Like it's real smooth. You know, he took so much flack for that album. I think mainly because people were pissed off at him for taking that like Bon Iver, like standing in the woods pose.
He didn't need to do all that.
But
some of the stuff on that album that is, I can go into the woods and I'm good. It's interesting and it is different.
It is different. You know. And doesn't he have some like Tennessee roots or something? Like it didn't come all the way from nowhere, I guess.
Yeah, it's fun. But this cut right here.
Was good.
This will change my mood.
Yeah. I am gonna dial that one up. Mm. Don't tell Guy.
Okay. I won't. And your jam?
Well, my jam is coming from The Coup, because I thought we're going to have this whole discussion about Boots Riley and this movie, but we got to hear some of The Coup.
Okay.
And really, his music has been like pretty radical, pretty anti-capitalist for quite some time now.
Yeah.
And this song, 5 Million Ways to Kill a CEO, is one of my favorite jams from him. This is off of his album Party Music, which is from 2001. And the kind of interesting bit of trivia about this album is that it was released the week of September 11th with a cover of himself and Pam the Funkstress blowing up the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
Do you remember this?
That was them?
That was them.
Oh my God.
And it was like a guitar,
this.
Like a guitar that was like worked, like, you know, kind of jerry rigged as like a dynamite case. And they were kind of blowing up the guitar, which was blowing up the building. And their whole thing was like, no. Obviously, it was not, we didn't know about that. It obviously was not about the World Trade Center blowing up per se. It was about like us blowing up capitalism with our music.
I read about this. I didn't know him then.
Yeah.
But I read about the, and years later, I, of course, never connected it. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, you guys can all look this up. There's a little, like, Wired magazine article about it. It's all over the internet, but basically they had to pull it, change the image, push the album back by 2 months, and then, re-release it then because it was just, like, way too much. I know. So, all the same, this is 5 Million Ways to Kill a CEO. Do your checks have elasticity? Did they cut off your electricity? Did you scream and yell explicitly? Force the boss into complicity. I'm a white chalk stencil, but I push a pencil. Rolling dope fiend rentals to your residential. Broke as fuck eating lentils with no utensil. Finna teach pimp class with a whole credential. By the way, I mean, this song is obviously satire, and I should say that, like, The Coup worked in a lot of satirical forms. I don't think they were actually asking for CEOs to be killed in 5 million ways.
No, but damn, this song, damn.
It's tight.
That's, yeah, okay.
It's really good. That whole album is really good. There's another song on it called Wear Clean Drawers, and it's all about his parents telling him to wear clean underwear every day. And I find myself thinking about it quite often whenever I put new underwear on. And also, I should say that he is such a badass, and like, he's been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like exciting to see somebody who's a musician take this turn. Like, how many like musician / screenwriters can we name?
Well, I don't know, but I can tell you another musician who's doing kind of the same thing right now. And not that, you know, I don't know that she hasn't, as far as I know, hasn't directed a film yet. But Jean Grey is kind of pivoting and doing a lot of things outside of music. And so that's kind of exciting to see.
Yeah.
Because these are incredibly talented people doing this.
Yeah.
And, you know, a movie like, you know, Sorry to Bother You, knowing Boots' past and his history and his, you know, what he's, you know, songs he's written, like, that, I felt like this story's in good hands.
Yes.
One way or another, you know, it's not going to, everything has its flaws, whatever, but this is a story that's in good hands.
Right, so. And, like, the message was always there. And as you can hear in this song, he knows how to, like, embed the message in a party.
Yeah,
you
yes.
You know what I mean? Where it's not just, like, heavy-handed, anti-capitalist rant. It's like...
Yeah, he still manages to be a rock
star.
It's
exuberant.
The last release that I was aware of, I remember him... I mean, it has to be a couple of years now, but the video for I can't remember the song, but I was like, this dude is just a bad motherfucker.
He sure is. Wait, how did you meet him?
Through W. Kamau Bell.
Okay.
Yeah, we just connected. He did a show with us.
Mm-hmm.
He, I mean, all around good dude. In San Francisco, would write and produce shorts, and I did one with... with some San Francisco comics, and including Kamau, and Boots let us use his song as the soundtrack for the short.
Nice.
So just it was it's and it, I mean he was just I just call, hey man, can we use the song? You run in? Yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah,
you
know, he seems like he'd be like so just like the Oakland fam connection.
Yeah, so it was, you know, I mean, he's always been a good dude, and I'm really, really excited for him, and Lakeith too. I mean, he was on Kamau and I, we had a podcast a while ago. And Lakeith was on,
Lakeith, I feel like, is an actor who, in some ways, you don't expect him to be a leading man because he has this kind of quiet, soulful energy.
Yeah,
but that's exactly the kind of person that you needed to anchor that role.
Yeah,
because you need to see sort of that like questioning look in his eyes sometimes, where he's like, "Can I do this? Can I sell out my people? Can I take this money and run, or what?"
And he's a weird guy, or it comes off strange. And maybe that's because we were sort of introduced to him through Atlanta, and his character in Atlanta is just kind of this odd, kind of out there dude. You know, Lakeith is a very smart guy and very, you know, but so it's interesting to see this sort of, I don't know if I could say, like, a new type of leading man, and I can't wait to see what he does next.
And I hope he does, like, get some work from this. You never know after a movie like this.
I mean, that dude is, I think he's kind of unstoppable right now. I think he's,
I mean, he's the one who gets to yell, "Get out," and "Get out."
That's right. Oh, I forgot about that.
The title
boy.
Delivery.
Yeah.
One thing I should just add, too, with the coup is that Pam the Funkstress, who was the DJ that he worked with a lot in the coup, passed away last year. And I noticed he devoted the film to her as well. So I wanted to just put a little nod to her with that song. But I think that concludes our jam session. Well, Guy had to run out on us to his other family, so I'm going to go ahead and read the credits for a change of pace. You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by Guy Branum, with me, Margaret Wappler, and Kevin Avery. Kevin, tell us where people can find you online.
Oh, well, I am at Kevin Avery on Twitter, and I'm at Kevin Avery Comedy on Instagram.
Nice. And do you have any performances coming up?
On, I'll be on date night at UCB Franklin. That's 9:30 p.m. Come check that out. That's Thursday the 26th. Boy, I did that all out of sequence. And then on Saturday the 28th, I'll be on a show called Story Smash. But I can't tell you where it is because it's not in my calendar. And I'm
good enough.
I didn't write all the details.
People,
down.
Google
I'm very
Story
disorganized.
Smash.
It's been a stressful day, people. Google Story Smash.
There you go. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to everyone for the 5-star reviews in iTunes. You could keep some more coming our way. We wouldn't mind that.
Keep doing it.
If you haven't already, please review us. This week we'd like to thank pre-order Guy's book already. What a great handle name. Unbelievable. I think we might have to submit that into the best of the year. Love the smart, hilarious feminist rundown. Goodbye, Guy's book already. Person says, a bright spot in a gloomy world. Captain Nate. No, sorry. Catnap 2000. It is so great to rest the ears inside these exciting, thought-provoking conversations where no topic is too trivial to unearth the profound pain, joy, wonder, and purpose of being human. Wow. Catnap, I would buy your novel. Like, okay. I think you've got a novel in you. Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket. We're also on Instagram at Pop Rocket Podcast, or join our Facebook group and join the discussion, for instance, about the seal of approval and whether The Rock deserves such a mighty thing and the Wobbler test. We're a production of MaximumFun.org. Our new editor, welcome to the family, is Shayna DeLauria, and our old school editor is Laura Swisher.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.